And this is User-Friendly 2.0. I am your host, Bill Sickens, and joining me are my co-hosts, Jeremy, Gretchen, Bill, and G. Today, we've got a great show for you. Tech in the Ear, actually built into the brain. Daniel Newman, author of the best-selling book Human Machine, is going to be joining us to talk about Elon Musk's new idea to connect your brain to your phone. Also best-selling author Joan Lubar, Rock and Roll at Any Age. I think she's a best-selling author.
She is.
Yeah, she is. Yes. So there you are.
Why not?
So we got that coming up for you today. And also, tech editor Bill Snodgrass is going to be reviewing a game, which he will talk to us about in a few minutes. It's been under embargo and is just coming out this month. And what do we got in the news, Gretchen?
Oh, it looks like Capital One hit with a huge data breach.
Yep. 100 million client records exposed. This was announced a little earlier in the week. We actually covered it on Tech Tuesday. And check out Tech Tuesday, 6:40 a.m. on First Edition. So if you have a Capital One card and if you got it or even applied for one after 2005, you're going to want to listen up to this. They've had a huge data breach. This one's a little unique. The person that is responsible for it, or at least being accused of it, is local in the United States, a woman that lived in Seattle. They arrested her this week, and Capital One is letting us know that this information's out there. It includes social security numbers, home addresses, bank account information, even credit limits.
What'd she do, sell it to somebody?
What generally happens with this stuff is it's taken, it's put on the dark web and other places. Sometimes they sit and hold on to it for 6 months, a year, before it even gets out. So watch your accounts. Make sure that any unusual transactions are addressed. You do have a limited time to be able to do that. Capital One is offering free credit monitoring. Maybe take advantage of that. Keep an eye on these things.
Okay, so our next news item is we have contact lenses that zoom when you blink twice.
Yeah, this kind of goes along with the movie we just reviewed on Fast and Furious here. And one of our guests today that's going to be talking a little bit about cybernetics. It is interesting. It's out there. Cybernetics is coming into play, and these contact lenses are first step of that. You blink twice, and they give you zoom vision. I don't know how well it works
okay,
yet.
Okay, so they're powered somehow?
I listen to this, and I go, how many of us don't blink twice? So you're in focus, out of focus, in focus, out of focus. That would drive you crazy.
Yeah,
okay. You don't wear contact lenses, so we don't know, are they powered? Do they come in and out of your eyes? Do you wear them for a full month? Is it a one-day thing?
This is a little lens on a camera. It kind of zooms out, zooms in. Your eyes get bigger and smaller.
We'll have to decide on one of us as a test subject for these and try them out. All right, what's next?
Actually, okay. I kind of have a little bit of knowledge on that one.
Oh, Bill, go ahead.
Well, I mean, usually with that kind of thing, they're using a membrane that adjusts it. The lens itself warps to create the zoom.
All right. Well, again, we need to try them out here. I think it's a matter of we need to see how this works. So, but anyway, cybernetics are here. Whether we're ready for it or not, I like cybernetics. I like cyborgs. Let's see what happens. What's next?
All right. Avengers Endgame released on digital this week, and the Blu-ray will be available August 13th.
So I haven't seen this yet.
No, I did.
What do you think?
I saw both movies. It's a five-hour... Well, this will be a director's cut, so it'll be 6 hours if you go back to Infinity Wars. I thought this was a really ambitious one movie that they took 2 years to give to us. I actually enjoyed it. And if you're a Marvel movie maniac, this is a must-have.
All right, so I'm going to check it out. Yep. And for those that don't do it on digital, looks like
you
August
know me.
13th.
I don't like very many movies. Yeah. I like this one.
Yeah, you like this one, so I'll have to see it.
Okay, our next news topic is the Google Pixel 4 phone will have radar.
So this bids.
What exactly does that mean?
Well, it bids the question. In all honesty, how smart is too smart for a phone? Yeah,
kind of radar.
So no, it's not that kind of radar. That's something for more like your era.
Yeah.
But what they're actually doing, and the iPhones have this, and we've seen it a little bit, but the Pixel seems to be kind of making the biggest push on it, is the ability to pick up hand gestures and those type of things. So pretty soon, we won't even necessarily need the touch screen. You'll just move your hand and the phone will know what you want to do. At least that's the goal. So the radar device...
I would hate that.
Radar device...
I don't like that at all.
Yeah.
I already know that on the phone I have right now, that I get into a fight with it every so often where it keeps blanking the screen every time I move. So I do have to agree with you on this. But we'll see how Google gets this implemented. They've done some stuff pretty well. Hopefully, it will have an off switch. What do we got next?
All right. This one's kind of creepy. Siri is listening to you on your Apple Watch.
All right. So we're picking on Apple today because the Apple Watch seems to have, they won't call it a bug, but when you lift your arm, it automatically starts recording. And that recording is sent somewhere for the quote-unquote purpose of making the AI better. We do know, and I know this is the case on most of the different smart assistants and those type of things, where some of the recordings are looked at by people that either work for the companies or contractors. It came out that Google was doing this a while back. But in those cases, most of the time, at least you know you're recording. On the Apple Watch, it seems to be just doing it, and they're picking up conversations that are very intimate and other things that you just necessarily don't want recorded. There is a way to turn this off, and you go into your watch settings to do it, and it might be a good idea.
So if I turn it off, what happens?
If you turn it off, the ability when you lift your arm for it to start listening to you is turned off, at least according to Apple. If you want to use the Siri assistant, then you have to manually engage or use an action word to be able to get her to listen.
Fine. I don't even like Siri. You know, you were talking.
You wouldn't.
I don't. I mean, every time I ask Siri for anything, I'm sorry. I'm listening, you know, not very well.
This is coming from the man that managed to piss off Alexa.
Yeah, this is true. I know you've been mean to your digital assistant, so I don't feel bad for you. All right, what do we got next?
Okay, now our next one is the Equifax settlement is in the works.
All right. So we all know about the Equifax breach, biggest one to date so far. They're coming up with, I believe it's a $700 million settlement, and they're offering everybody that may have been affected by the breach, which is pretty much everybody in the United States that's an adult, a settlement. And it's either 10 years of free credit monitoring, $125, or they have another thing on there too, which is kind of interesting, where you can claim up to 10 hours of time at $25 an hour to be able to get reimbursed for the time you've wasted on dealing with your credit.
I want cash.
Yeah, cash money. Well,
if I want cash, now what?
Well, you go on and you fill out this online thing. We'll put the link out on our social media.
You gotta fill something out.
You fill something out, of course.
Okay. Maybe. Yeah, there we go.
There's something that's actually important concerning this news article is that there are people who are trying to already scam people out of their Equifax settlements.
Yeah, there's a number of fake websites out there where they have a one-off on the domain name. It looks just like and feels just like. Be absolutely sure that you either get to it from Equifax's real site, that you've keyed it into your browser, and that you've spelled it correctly, because that's where they're kind of targeting these things. It's not the easiest name to spell, and sometimes typo happens. And when it does, if you reverse the letters, you can actually get to a scammer site. Don't open the site under any circumstances in an email. Make sure you open your browser and you go to it there yourself.
So okay, we have our last topic, and that is DirecTV is changing its name.
Yes, this specifically affects DirecTV Now. The DirecTV satellite system, they're being somewhat silent on what they're doing with that name. DirecTV Now is the streaming version of DirecTV. AT&T bought all of that a few years ago, and they're rebranding as AT&T TV Now.
How about Indirect TV?
Yeah, Indirect, yeah. That might be a way to do it. Trying to pick up with all the cord cutting that's been going on, it makes sense to try to brand things directly, but DirecTV is well known. I'm not sure if this is a good idea or not, but it is what they're doing. So, all right, and on the topic of hacks, I'm just going to quickly throw this out there for our listeners in the Reno area. Washoe County School District this week has announced a hack. The student data is out there. So if you have a student in that school district, check it out. They're releasing information on what to do about it. All right, that's our news. And for our topics today, one of the things we have is a new product, tabletop role-playing game. Bill, what is the product that you're going to be reviewing a little later in the show?
Well, it's the second edition of the Pathfinder role-playing game system.
Okay, so we'll get into some detail on that in a little bit here. But for right now, we've had a number of questions that's come in from past weeks when you've covered things. Can you tell us a little bit about what tabletop role-playing is? 10,000-foot view answer. Is it like Monopoly? How does it differ? That type of thing.
It's a lot like a board game in a way, except depending on the game and how you play it, it can be a little bit more like theater, or a little bit more, well, like Monopoly.
So you sit with your friends, and it's something that you don't have to have a phone to do.
Your old dice?
You can use a phone. There's a lot of apps for it, but, you know, for that and tablets that make it easier for some games. But honestly, a lot of us play it the old-fashioned way, which is literally with pen and paper.
Yep, that's the way I like to do it. So, all right, you'll be back here in a little bit in the next two sections in to tell us exactly what's going on with this new release and something I know you've had a chance to look at that's just coming out on the market and on the topic of gaming. Jeremy, I hear you have something for us, and this is for everybody's moms that say that gaming will never get you anywhere.
That's right. We have the game Fortnite by Epic. They had their World Cup gaming this weekend, and we have one guy who won the singles tournament. He's 16, and he won $3 million playing a video game.
Pretty darn cool, huh?
That is absolutely amazing. We're going to look into doing that. All right, this is User Friendly. We've got a great show for you coming up here. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Keep sending us your questions. That's how we do our programming. One User Friendly on Facebook, one User Friendly on Twitter, or call us. We actually do have a phone number, 503-766-6264. Or as I've been told to put it,
503-766-6264.
It's not an O. So, with no further ado, I'd like to welcome our guest for this segment, Daniel Newman. Daniel Newman works with Futurum Research and is the best-selling author of the book Human Machine. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Always excited to come on and talk a little future, and, of course, the future of Human Machine.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I know one of the things that's been big in the news right now is this Bluetooth implant from Elon Musk. Can you tell us what that is and what's about and what is just going on with it?
Yeah, over the last few weeks, there's been a lot of talk coming out in the media about Elon Musk's, the company he's invested in, to the tune of about $100 million, and the company's called Neuralink. And so what is being said is that Musk is essentially looking to insert Bluetooth-enabled implants into our brains. The claim is that the devices could repair motor function in people with brain trauma. It could help people deal with blindness. Of course, those are some of the healthcare applications. There's a number of other potential use cases that are either not is obviously positive or more questionable. Size-wise, one of the things that Musk is really focused on is the fact that these implants are very, very small. You're talking about a little chip that connects to 1,000 wires that in all measures about 1/10 the width of a human hair. So a tiny little implant, Musk believes, he strongly believes, he's an aesthetics guy. He builds these cars that everybody seems to love. Roofs that people seem to not be so sure about, but he likes the aesthetic. And the aesthetic here is that he wants it to be not too big, and he wants it to be something that people would want because the size fits. To me, the question is, do people really want this? And I think that's something we're going to have to think a little bit about.
Well, it's like, what could possibly go wrong with all of that, right? My goodness.
Oh, my God. Well, you just think about the fact of first of all, a private corporation now suddenly having an uplink to our nervous systems. it's a pretty overwhelming thought when you really get into it.
So you can hack my brain. They're hacking our election system. They're hacking Equifax and all these companies. So now these cyber people have access to my brain, correct?
Well, it's obviously not like full on enable control, but when you think about the way it works, like with things such as neurostimulation, well, you could potentially utilize a technology like this to modify a behavior, and who gets to control that? So, you stimulate someone's brain to help them determine when they have feelings of, excitement or sadness, right? This could be used to aid in depression. But again, who's saying that we want this corrected and we want this corrected in this fashion? And as someone who loves the future and loves technology, I worry about how much control should a private third-party entity have, and then when this becomes data, like our data that's being used on Facebook and our data that's being abused across different applications without a lot of knowledge or understanding by the market, well, now this has reached a whole nother level. Now it's just not some AI that's listening to us when we didn't ask it to. Now it's actually in our systems, and what happens when that gets hacked?
So I get the sense that you're not opposed to this as much as you want maybe more standards.
Well, it's like everything that's going on right now, and if you don't mind, I'm gonna caveat onto another AI topic and come back to this. So last week, Apple got a lot of flack because Siri was supposedly capturing people's most intimate moments, and then the contractors were listening to them to be able to process the machine learning and data so they can improve their algorithms and improve the experience of Siri. So if you listen to that whole statement, what you're essentially hearing are two things. One is our data is being collected without us necessarily knowing. And Apple has a whole flock of contractors who are listening to us, supposedly anonymized. At the same time, though, the goal that Apple has is to improve an experience, which most of us like. We like when Siri does what it's supposed to. We want, you know, when we ask for a direction, when we're looking for a restaurant, when we want to review a product.
Sure, sure.
And we say, right, so all those things happen. We want Siri to work well. But we don't necessarily want Siri to listen to us when we're having a intimate discussion with our spouse.
Right, of course.
When we are sharing, right? So there's these fine lines. Well, it's the same thing here. Like when implants have been used in healthcare, for instance, a lot of these are IoT control devices for monitoring blood sugar. They're inserted into our bodies. There's a certain stipulation or set of things that this device can do, and it can't do anything else. Well, when you start to talk about things that are wired into our brains that have the ability to provide stimulation and such, where are those demarcations between what the corporations that are providing this are able to do, like I said, improve life quality for someone that's had a stroke,
right,
versus implant something into my brain under that same guise or under a similar reasoning, right? Say I'm depressed. But then suddenly that is used to promote my desire to buy things.
Right.
Or enhance, we're even seeing enhancements in technology that are now processing brainwaves and turning them into text. Do I want my thoughts captured?
So to go back to my question, so you're not necessarily opposed, but you're worried about the danger.
I didn't answer that. So coming full circle, I'm concerned about lack of regulation and having this be fully in the control of private corporations and our government that isn't quite up to snuff on what's going on and how to regulate this.
Yeah, but it has been my just experience that the government tends to be two steps behind on all of this stuff. Now we're talking about a Bluetooth device. Now, normally, just to play the devil's advocate here a little bit, the Bluetooth is a limited network. It would most likely connect to an app on your phone, and you would still have an off button. But is that correct for this device?
So I can't tell you for certain how it's going to work. Haven't seen a demonstration. Haven't gotten a chance to play with it. In theory, it would have to connect to our phone or some sort of low power device that's being carried on us at all times. Because as you mentioned, it's near field. It can only work with a device in near proximity. But that device that's in the proximity has a tremendous amount of remote controllability. As I mentioned about the Siri hack, these companies can potentially engage our devices remotely.
Right.
Or the bigger problem is more often we opt into things that we don't know.
Yeah, well, and that's been the big thing, that you don't read the terms, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I see where you're definitely coming from here with the idea of, you know, what could possibly go wrong. So we've got about a minute left here. Tell us a little bit about your book, Human Machine.
Yeah, so the book Human Machine, the subtitle is The Future of Our Partnership with Machines. And if you look at what's going on in the world, there's a tremendous amount of apprehension about what will AI and robotics and robotic process automation mean to the future of work. Is the fourth and fifth industrial revolution going to make mankind extinct in terms of adding value, or at least in terms of blue-collar work? Are robots and drones going to start doing all the deliveries? Who's going to drive trucks? Are cars and drivers going to be replaced? And so what we really do is take a look into the future of what all of the hype in this area is about. What does it mean? Are our jobs at risk? What's going to happen with corporations? How are we going to upskill the workforce? How should people make themselves more marketable? How do companies make investments and decisions and build cultures that are able to cultivate the value of new technologies while concurrently not destroying the culture and creating a fear of people in worrying about their job security? So we try to give it a optimistic yet realistic look.
Right,
if I can use those two words concurrently, because from a historical trend standpoint, every time industrial revolutions have come, people have felt like, oh gosh, our job's going to go away. But new jobs, new businesses, new opportunities, whether it was developers and social media managers in the last wave came in, or before that, right? You know, early white collar accounting type jobs that were built as calculators.
Right, right.
Became more, you know, so the point is the fear is always created in the media. We all love that. Concurrently, though, there is a lot of positives. There is a lot of scale, and there are a lot of opportunities for people to use our empathic skills to a much greater extent. But there will definitely be some impact on, you know, blue collar, mundane, task oriented jobs.
Right, right. All right. So cybernetics, ladies and gentlemen, love it, hate it. It's here. And we're seeing it in a lot of different things. Give us your social media. How does somebody get a copy of your book?
Yeah, absolutely. So social media, follow me on Twitter. That's my favorite channel, at Daniel Newman, UV. And the book is published by Kogan Page out of the UK. But you can jump on Amazon and search human/machine.
All right.
Human/machine.
I'm going to look it up.
Thanks,
Daniel,
everyone.
Thank you so much for joining us today. The time goes by fast, doesn't it?
It was a great time. Love talking to you. Hope to come back soon.
Absolutely. We hope to have you back soon. Daniel Newman, this is User Friendly. We'll be back after the break.
And welcome back to User Friendly 2.0. I'm Bill Snodgrass, your host for this little segment where I review the Pathfinder 2nd Edition Core Rulebook. Mount Paizo sent me this over a couple of weeks ago along with the Bestiary. I'm not going to be covering the Bestiary, and all I want to say about it is it's beautiful, it's well, and it's a good complement needed to this game. The Core Rulebook, of course, is the focus because this is the 2nd Edition and this is a whole new set of rules. They've changed some things, and by that, I mean this is going to be a mixed review because for some people, this is going to be their game, and for other people, this is not going to be your cup of tea. And by that, what I mean is they've simplified a number of things, especially in character creation, you know, building your stats, hit points, skills. They've even made the number of skills less. But if I had to say what was the defining thing of this game, is feats. Now, those who are seasoned Pathfinder players like myself, you know that feats are important to the game. And in this case, I think they've really pushed that buck. They've really gone over the top on feats. And by that, what I mean is, usually when you have a character class, let's say fighter, pick an archetype which defines and gives you certain abilities at certain levels. And usually you have about 3 or more archetypes per class, you know, fighter, druid, cleric. They also added in Alchemist now as a standard class, and for those who are curious too, they also added in Goblin as a starting race that you can use. But if I have to step back, and that's because I'm going to talk about races and stuff like that, your race, your background, and your class all give you feats. And your class, when you choose an archetype, it's like one ability, and then your customization of each class, you can change it how you like by using these new feats that you gain at different levels. Combat has been simplified as well, and yet I feel it also might be complicated. That is to say, usually it used to be you had a move action and then a standard action, which could be called attacking or things like that, and maybe a bonus action. Now you have 3 actions per turn. Some actions take 1 action, some actions take 2 actions. So let's say you wanted to move, that's 1 action. You wanted to run, that's 2 actions. Sometimes you cast a spell, it's 1 action. Sometimes you cast a spell and it's 3 actions. It takes up your whole turn. That being said, I think it can speed things up. It might slow things down. Now, one of those caveats I'm going to say about this is new players, old timers, make sure you read. I was doing this, and I've had it for a few dozen hours trying to make characters, learn the game myself, and I keep feeling that some things that could have been made more clear early on in the book, you know, really put in the bold type, I guess you could say, weren't. And so there was a lot of things that I missed and I had to go back and reread. And I still feel like I've missed a number of things. And I think that might be an issue. So if you're going to be a GM, definitely make sure you know what's going on. Run it through. If you're a new player, you know, your player talk to each other, make sure you got your numbers right, you're reading things correctly, and I want to hear what you have to say. You know, we talked earlier in the show, Bill Sickens, our host, he always tells you where you can look us up at, you know, our Facebook, our Twitter, we have a phone number, we have email. I want to hear what you guys have when you get this. This game came out on August 1st, and if you picked it up, what your opinions are. My opinion is, again, this is going to be a game some people are going to love. This is going to be a game that some people are probably going to hate, to be honest. And I think at the end of the day, you're going to have to try it out for yourself. For me, it's something I'm going to give a try because I just enjoy different things and I want to see how this plays out. But as a review, I think it's going to leave it up to you. Go to your local friendly gaming store, pick one up, take a look through, see how you feel. I know they're going to bring out probably their Pathfinder Society games, you know, the League Play or whatever, that you can go in and drop in on a game and learn it. I think that's going to be important. Enjoy it. Try it out. Let me know what you have to think about it. It's different. That is going to be my review on it. It is different. It's not good. It's not bad. It may not even be what I was expecting after they came out with Starfinder. But that's my opinion. You know, I have biases from other games. I have 20 plus years of gaming experience, and it's different. Anyway, we'll be back right after this break.
Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Check us out. Did you miss a show? Well, don't do that. But if you do that, we do have a podcast. It's available at theanswerportland.com at any time. Post about 15 minutes after the show airs. Get on there, listen to it, send us your questions. And now we're going to take a rebellious look at life, health, and spiritual wisdom from the Sassy Sage. Joining us today is Joan Luber, author of Rock and Roll at Any Age. Welcome.
Hi. Good to be here.
Gee, I know you have a few questions here.
I'm a rock and roller.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm 70, and I still play drums in a band, and we gig quite often, you know, 3 or 4 times a month. I practice at least once a week with the band, play full court fast break basketball. So I'm a pretty active senior, if I must be labeled that way. So you wrote a book, Rock and Roll at Any Age. How old are you?
Actually, I'm 77, and I admit my age, but it's really kind of humorous because I look a lot younger.
Yeah.
I act a lot younger, and I'm single. So if I decide I ever want to go on something like Match, I can't put my age in because then I'll only get the octogenarians.
Yeah, who aren't very active.
Right.
So, but you know, one of the things I was thinking of when about this is like, this is a technology show. And these days I see people out there on their phones or on their computers. They're sedentary. We've become a sedentary society, which is, and the obesity rate in this country is like 38% or something like that.
Actually, 67%.
It's awful.
Yeah.
So tell our listeners, why do I want to keep rock and rolling at any age?
Well, if you ask some of those people that are overweight and sitting and watching TV and on their cell phones and on their computers all the time, how do they feel? Well, they probably don't feel so good. And the purpose of what I do and how I help people and why I wrote my book was to teach people how to age with lots of vitality, be able to be active, be able to do what they want. And there's some pretty simple things to do. Not always easy because we have to change some habits, but there really are a plethora of things that create a healthy person.
Like?
For example, you start with a triangle. One side of the triangle is your attitude. The other side of the triangle is movement. Gotta move. So all that blood gets around and you start feeling good. I know you play the drums, Gary. So
And basketball.
And I know how active that means you have to be for both of those.
Yes.
Then the bottom is your nutrition. What you put in your mouth and the supplements you take as well as the food. because both really help you build healthy cells, build vital cells. There's so many cells that are dying every single day. So whatever you put in your body is going to create those new cells, and you don't want them feeling sluggish and tired and not working properly.
So if I'm a somewhat sedentary person like Bill, who I'm not going to necessarily point fingers
at.
Maybe or maybe not. It depends on the day.
So how does somebody like Bill, who I'm not pointing a finger at.
Then why are you pointing a finger?
I'm not. Have you seen my finger pointing? How does he start? Let's see. How do you start? I've been sitting a long time. I'm overweight. Where do I start?
Wow.
I won't tell the audience what Bill really looks like, okay?
He's a handsome guy.
Well, I like to start with a little questionnaire just to see where you're at. But I do have a foundation program that I think everybody needs. And it starts with some mild cleansing. And then there's some foundational nutrients that work really well for people. And we call it the Prove It Challenge. So you're going to prove to yourself how you feel and that you can feel amazing after a month.
So why'd you write this book other than to, and by the way, some of the people I play basketball with are in their mid-70s and early 80s, and they run. I mean, we play hard. And this isn't old people running around on crutches. We play very hard. My band, we're a rock band. We play hard.
Pictures.
So why did you write this book? Why the book? And why should our audience read it?
Well, first of all, I've been doing what I'm doing for about 35 years. And I got into it for two reasons. When I was a lot younger than that, my older son was ADHD, and I started looking for nutritional answers, which weren't available a long time ago. This was in like the end of the 60s. But I really kept my interest in health. And then when I started having problems when I was 40, I knew I had to do something after I had some surgery, and I was tired. I was falling asleep at work. I was gaining weight. And the doctor told me, no offense, doctors, but he didn't know anything about nutrition. So what he said to me, oh, you're over 40. Therefore, you're going to be more tired. You're going to gain weight. My ears were burning as I walked out of his office. I was so mad. So I started on my own search. I took responsibility for my health. And the first thing I can tell everybody is, take responsibility for your own health and well-being, because that is critical. Doctors don't know everything about nutrition. We have a healthcare that's sick care. What we really want is a healthcare that's well care. And that's what I do. That's what I teach. And after being in the business for a long time and working with people, I've had so many people say, oh, you can't be your age. You just don't look it. You don't look it.
I mean, I wish people could see you. You really do not look 77.
Thank goodness.
I mean, whatever 77 is supposed to look like.
Well, that is a problem for me, because I meet people that are around my age and I go, God, they must be in their 80s. And then I realize they're like around my age, but I just don't look and feel. I feel like I'm 50, I guess, if I could give an age.
So 77 is the new 50.
I think so.
You know, but...
But I didn't answer your question. So why would they listen to me? Well, so many people asked me, how do you do it? What are you doing? And I finally decided my picture of health is very complete. It's not, although I represent and work with nutritional products, I think it's important what you're thinking, what you believe, like spirituality, what your movement is. But your attitude is so, so, so important, all along with nutrition and other
ideas. I do have to agree with you on that one. Yeah. Attitude is such a big part of really doing anything, and certainly keeping in shape and all that type of stuff. And
we have just about 30 seconds left. How do I find your book?
You go on Amazon and you can look up Rock and Roll at Any Age, and you'll come up with my book, Joan Lubar. You can also put my name in, but Rock and Roll at Any Age is much more fun to look up.
We'll get the link up on our social media as well. And do you have Facebook, Twitter, or any of those things?
Facebook is The Sassy Sage.
Okay.
Which is what I call myself, because I'm very sassy. And I feel at my age, I have a lot of wisdom to share, and I would like to share it with people.
Well, check it out, The Sassy Sage, and we will put the contact information up on our social media. This is User Friendly. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to User Friendly. Another great show this week, and actually the last one for a while. We start going into the fall and we start getting into our conventions. So we'll talk about that in a few minutes here, but we didn't get a chance to do a Q&A this week, and it's a part that I really like doing, but we had so many great interviews and so much going on that we just didn't get around to it. But there is one thing that I want to touch upon that has come out and has been a question, and that is the idea of unlocked cell phones. And the reason why this is a topic is because Apple's new version of iPhone is going to be released unlocked, and the cell phone companies, especially here, don't like it. So
why not?
Well, that's the question of the moment. When you have a classical cell phone, classical being, you know, 5 minutes ago now in technology,
right. Yes.
You have a situation where when you buy it, it generally only works with the carrier you buy it for.
Correct.
So an unlocked cell phone will work supposedly with anybody.
Well, now we know why.
Yeah, yeah.
Now we know why they're all objecting to that.
Yep, and that's...
I think this is great.
I think it's great, too. Most consumers do. I mean... And Jeremy and Gretchen, you know, we've done stuff overseas in Europe and things, and that's one place you do need an unlocked cell phone if you want it to work.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But now my question is, can I buy my Apple phone and then use it on any network?
This is what Apple is saying is going to be the case. Now, I will give one caveat to that. In the United States, we still use two different standards for cell phones. So there's CDMA and there's GSM.
And then there's working and not working.
Yeah.
My case.
Yeah. In G's case, it's all usually a matter of not working.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, now, is that operator error or is that the phone?
Usually operator error. And it's me and technology.
Yeah.
You know, we just don't like each other.
I think G has a field around him that just kind of turns the tech off. It's an interesting thing.
I've heard of the anti-technology field. Yeah.
I hate technology.
We heard last week, and I'm sure we'll hear again.
Many times.
So what you want to do is check out any phone you buy actually can be unlocked. The worldwide standard for the most part is GSM. CDMA is a little older standard that's still used here primarily by Verizon. You do see it around. And if you want a phone that is truly unlocked, you want to make sure that it would work with both of those standards. But getting something that's open at the very least so that you can change the SIM card and be able to use it with a different network is what we're actually talking about with unlocked phones. So the question that came in was someone that was going to buy this new iPhone and was looking at it and was wondering if there was an equivalent in the Android world. And what that comes down to is simply a matter of checking out the technology you're getting. All of the different phone providers, the actual manufacturers, usually do have an unlocked version. It also depends on how much you want to pay for them. Because
usually it costs more.
Yeah, it costs more because a lot of times the carrier will subsidize the cost of the phone.
Yeah.
And that's why you end up with that. So anyway, Curry, coming up next week on User Friendly, we are going to be at Black Hat 2019. Reporter Chaz Wellington is going to be on the floor recording live. Black Hat is the big cybersecurity conference that's held every year. We've been talking about hacks. We talked about the Capital One hack today. We've talked about a number of different things on many, many shows. Equifax coming out with their settlement. What are the technology professionals doing about it? Well, that's what we're going to find out at Black Hat, hopefully.
Awesome.
All righty. This is User Friendly, keeping you safe on the cutting edge. We will be back next week.
User Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2019 User Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the host and not necessarily User Friendly Media Group, Inc. or this station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Podcast available at TheAnswerPortland.com or UserFriendlyShow.com.